the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income. Hope everyone had a great 2017, and we look forward to 2018 to bringing you the very best information to help make retirement planning much easier.
And greetings to everybody. I'm John Loeffler. Well, they thought it would never happen or never get done, but lo and behold, it did happen. The Republicans actually passed a tax bill by Christmas. Not since 1986 has there been a sweeping tax law change impacting businesses, individuals, and retirees since 1986, as I said. It's a major change. There has been a lot of disinformation out there. There was a lot of trading back and forth for political reasons. That happens. You expect that. But the real question is, what does the law say? And of course, while it was in the process of winding its way through both the House and the Senate, there were a lot of changes as everyone was trying to keep up with it. But now that the law is out as a law, we'll clarify the new law and how this affects you. So, Jim, now that it is law, let's get into these details and how it affects the listeners here, especially on an individual basis and in particular retirees.
Well, one of the reasons, John, I think there's a lot of confusion out there. We had a House bill, we had a Senate bill, and then when they were going through negotiations, you had all these trial balloons. Hey, they were going to do this, they were going to leave this in. And of course, you have all this negotiation. However, the first thing about this bill that was passed, it's much different in many ways than either the House or the Senate. And it's not that simple. You remember on television, they would hold up a postcard and say, hey, we're going to get it down to a simple postcard. You know, basically, this is your money, this is your standard deduction, this is the tax you owe. It's not that simple. They kept seven tax brackets. So, sorry, folks, no more postcards.
Yeah, but wait a minute, Jim. You know, originally we were going to have just three brackets. It was going to be simplified. You could file your taxes on a postcard. Blah, blah, blah. But now it seems like we're what? Back at seven brackets again? So really, has anything changed?
Well, I mean, there's seven brackets, and the brackets, depending on which category of income you are, some went up, but I would say the majority of them went down. And let me just give you, let's start out with single individuals. First of all, the 10% tax bracket, which was $0 to $9,525 income, that's the same under the new law as it was under the old law. The next bracket is $9,525 to $38,700. Under the old law, you were in a 15% bracket if you were single. Under the new law, you're in a 12% bracket. So a 3 full percentage point drop in that tax bracket. Next, let's go to $38,700 to $82,500. That was formerly a 25% bracket. It is now 22% bracket. $82,000 to roughly $94,000 was a 25% bracket. It is now a 24% bracket. Then, if you earn $93,700 to $158,000, you were in a 28% bracket. Under the new law, you're in a 24% bracket. So the 24% bracket is from $82,000 all the way up to almost $196,000. So that's 3 full percentage points. That's a big impact. The next bracket is the 33% bracket. It's 195 to 200. It's roughly about a 5,000 stretch. That dropped to 32%. However, if you make, and this is where they say, hey, it's a giveaway to the rich. Not really. From 200,000 to 400, and let's round this off, 425,000. Under the old law, you were in a 33% bracket. Under the new law, you get bumped up to a 35% bracket, actually 2 percentage point increase. Then the 35% bracket is the same. It, let's say 425,000. Then from 426,000 to 500,000, you're in a 35% bracket versus the old bracket of 39.6. And over 500,000, you drop down from 39.6 down to 37. So if we look at the seven tax brackets, one went up, One remained the same. Five of them went down.
And what about married couples, too?
Pretty much the same thing, John. The brackets, I'm just going to go through these quickly. I'm going to round these numbers off. From 19,000 to 77,000, used to be 15, you dropped to 12. 77,000 to 156, used to be 25, you're now 22. 156 to 165, used to be 28, now you're 22. 165 to 238, used to be 28, you're 24 now. 238 to 315, used to be 33, down to 24. So that is a big, big break if you're in that bracket from 165 to 315. At 315 to 400, you drop down a percentage point from 33 to 32. If you're 400 to 4.25, you go up two percentage brackets to 35. The other old 35% bracket's the same. And then on 480,000 to 600,000, you drop from 39.6 to 35. And over 600,000, you drop from 39.6 down to 37. So overall, there's seven tax brackets. Five of them went down, one of them went up, and one of them stayed the same.
Well, I would guess, just briefly looking at it, that is good news, because what they did there was set the brackets higher with lower tax rates. So you would think that would especially affect the middle class in a positive way.
It does. But here's the real key thing. And we talked about this last year when this bill was first brought up. This tax bill does not affect people the same. It really depends on what state you live in and where you live, in terms of the two biggest deductions that most Americans take on their tax return. And that's the state taxes they pay and the property taxes they pay. So obviously, if you live somewhere like Nebraska, Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, places where the cost of living is cheaper, the tax rates are lower, the impact on you, if you're in an upper income individual, is going to be much, much different than if you live along the east or west coast in high tax states like California, New Jersey, and let's say New York. So there are a lot of offsets here, because even though the brackets went down, you lost a lot of your itemized deductions and you lost all of your exemptions, which would have been $4,100 per person. So for a family of four, that would have been roughly $16,400 this year. So you lost that. But even under the old law, they used to phase those out as individual incomes increase. So that's one of the big things that has gone into effect. They did bring down the tax rates, but they left the seven brackets instead of the three, because originally they were talking about 12, 25, and 35. Well, we got a lot of in-betweens, and also they got rid of a lot of itemized deductions.
Okay, you brought up an issue here that we discussed at length, too, prior to the bill passing, and that is the itemized deductions and the changes that were going to take place there. Let's look at that.
Well, the big one, let's begin with something that affects a lot of Americans, and that is the mortgage interest deduction. Under the old law, you could have and deduct the interest on a $1 million mortgage and $100,000 on a second mortgage. So you could deduct up to roughly $1.1 million. They lowered that. The new threshold is $750,000 for both first or second mortgages. Now, let me clarify here. If you have a $1 million mortgage now, you are unaffected by this bill, and you can refinance your existing debt that existed on December 14th, 2017. In other words, what they were trying to stop is, let's say you had a $500,000 mortgage and you went out and got a second loan for $250,000 to get up to that 750 bracket. What the law says is, if you have a $1 million mortgage and $100,000 second on your house, you can still deduct that. You are still under the guidelines of the old laws. Secondly, if that mortgage was in existence on December 14th of last year, you can refinance it and not be affected. So who this is going to impact the most is, let's say, new home buyers, or let's take another situation. You live in California. You have a house in San Francisco. It's worth several million dollars. You have a $1.1 million mortgage on it. Now you move to another state, and Nevada, Arizona, whatever, and you buy a new house. If you buy a new house, you will be subject to the $750,000 mortgage limitation.
Well, I know in future shows we're going to be covering the impact of this with real estate experts. I would guess this is going to put a damper on a lot of the expensive homes you find in states, especially states where it's expensive to live.
It will. In fact, there were several studies, we talked about them last year, some done by Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, that this could affect the McMansions that you see in states, let's say New York or California, where the real estate values are very expensive. I mean, the median price in San Francisco is 1.4, and that's probably a starter home. You want something really nice in Los Angeles and San Francisco, you're talking $4, $5, or $6 million. And a lot of those homes are on mortgages. And so this is definitely going to have an impact on that. But for most people, that will not impact them to any degree. If you live kind of like what we call the middle of the United States, that center section where the cost of living is a lot cheaper than what you're going to find in California or, let's say, New York.
Let's jump to investments. There was talk they were going to tinker with, what, dividends and capital gains, as I recall.
You know, that's the one thing they did not change, John. The new tax law doesn't change the capital gains rate. They're still the same, including the Obama tax of 3.8% added on dividends and capital gains. If you make $200,000, if you're single, $250,000. If you're married, that remained the same. The 0% tax rate is also the same. If you are single and make only $38,600, you pay zero capital gains. And if you are married, $77,200, you pay zero. The 15% rate goes all the way up to $425,000 if you're single, $479,000 if you're married. Now, there was some talk that they were going to change the cost basis, something called FIFO, first in, first out. In other words, if you bought a series of shares over a period of time, they were going to require that for a cost basis, you use, if you sell, the shares you bought first. They left that alone. So basically, John, when it came to capital gains, dividends, nothing really changed there.
And here's the biggie then. All the talk about lowering tax rates for businesses, effort to stimulate the economy and jobs.
Well, the corporate tax rate is 20%. So if you own a C corp, you know, the big corporations you see in the S&P 500, that's why a lot of analysts have upgraded their stock estimates, something that we covered in the weekend show. And the reason they did that is because, you know, if you lower the tax rates from 35 to 20, you would benefit. But there was talk about the flow through effect if you own something called a subchapter S. They placed a limitation on that of the 20% rate, and they phase it out. If you are single and have a sub-S corporation or partnership, they phase out the 20% tax rate after $157,500 of income. And if you are married and have a subchapter S, they phase out the income at 315, or the lower tax bracket. And this could affect a lot of individuals. Say, for example, you have a subchapter S corporation. Let's say you work in the medical field or you're a consultant. You're making $100,000, $150,000 a year, but you have a spouse that is salaried at $200,000 or $300,000 a year. Then that would be basically something that you would lose out on. So they cap these deductions in terms of income levels. And that was one of the loopholes that they were worried about that people would do. They would just switch their income from salary to flow through and capture the lower tax rate. But that they capped that, John, with the phase out of those lower tax rates once your income reaches a certain level.
So the tax rates are more favorable, but the loss of deductions, I think, is the one that may be concerning. You have the reduction of mortgage. Now, what about medical too? Don't forget to include that, because they've already excluded so much of medical. How well did that fare when they came out?
You know, we're going to get to that. The one good thing that they did is there was talk about removing the medical deductions. And boy, I tell you, ARP really lobbied very hard on that. They left medical deductions. And this is what affects a lot of retirees. Let's say as you age and get older, you go into a retirement home or you require nursing care. Those expenses could be very, very expensive, as many people know. And, you know, we had a client who we've done in a case study here on the program where their mother had a stroke, went into a retirement home at $6,500 a month. That was all deductible. So they were concerned that they were going to lose that deduction, but they kept the medical deduction. So that's a good thing about that.
And here's the one that nobody wants to talk about, it would seem, state and local taxes. And this has implications for states.
That was probably the biggest one that came out of all of this. There is no longer a deduction for state taxes. So this hits a lot of individuals in the high tax states like my own state of California, New York, think of New Jersey. And they did leave a deduction for property taxes. They capped it at $10,000. But John, $10,000 in a state like California, where you can see in many areas the property taxes are 2% and the homes are well over $1 million, a lot of individuals in California are going to lose a good portion of their property taxes because the homes are so expensive here. So it's not a problem if you live in a low cost of living state. It's a big problem if you live along the coast or you happen to own a McMansion. And here's another thing I want to warn individuals. A lot of people thought they'd get clever and they prepaid their property taxes for 2018. I got news for you. The IRS is going to watch that. You can pay all of your 2017 property taxes in 2017 if you did that by December 31st. But if you paid any portion of your 2018 taxes for property, they're not going to allow it if it exceeds over that $10,000.
Let's move it into the subject that we discuss here on the program, and that is retirees. How does all of this affect them?
You know what? There's some good news here because they raised the standard deduction from $12,000 to $24,000 for a married couple and from $6,000 to $12,000 for a single individual. In addition to that, they left the standard deduction increase for individuals over age 65. And that's $1,600 if you're single. So if you're single, you get a $12,000 standard deduction. You get another $1,600 on top of that if you're 65 and older. For a married couple, you have a standard deduction of $24,000 and $1,300 per individual age 65 and over. So if both couple are over age 65, that's an additional $2,600 plus the $24,000 standard deduction. So you basically have a $26,600 deduction. They also left for retirees over 70 or have an IRA. If you want to take a $100,000 distribution from your IRA and then send it to, let's say, a charity, they left that. But they also, John, they left the AMT tax. They kept it. And that's really probably going to affect people that have large capital gains or make large charitable deductions. Let's say that, for example, you have a paid for building or you have, you know, $1 million gain in a stock and you transfer it to a charitable trust where you get that deduction might be large enough where you might not get the full benefit because it could affect your AMT tax. So they still left the AMT tax. But, you know, for most retirees, you take that standard deduction of $24,000 for a married couple, throw in $1,300 a piece for being age 65. You know, that's quite large. And for many retirees that live in homes that are smaller, that are paid for, they may not be able to take full advantage of the charitable deductions. Let's say if they give to a charity or they give to their church, they may not realize it with the raise of the standard deduction. But for many retirees, you know, under $100,000, I would say that this tax bill is probably going to help them.
There's been a lot of discussion that a lot of this will affect people living in high tax states. So if we're staying in the realm of retirement planning, what should be incorporated in that?
You know, I think a lot of it is going to depend. Say, for example, you are an executive, you're getting ready to retire, you have a deferred comp program you're going to be taking, you have stock options, or you have a huge, huge capital gain, or you're selling your business. John, you definitely have to go think about where you're going to live, because you can save a considerable amount of money. Let's say you live in a high state like California. Let's say you're selling your business where the top tax rate here is 13.3%, or you invested in Bitcoin, or you invested in some of the FANG stocks where you have huge capital gains. Well, California doesn't distinguish between long-term or short-term gains. They treat everything as ordinary income. So you have to think real hard about the federal tax you are going to pay on capital gains, which could be up to 23.8%. You throw in California at 13.3, it makes a lot of sense to move to a state. Let's say you have a $1 million capital gain in California. You could save, let's say, $130,000 by moving to a tax-free state, like, let's say, Texas, Florida, or Nevada, or Washington, and save money.
And I guess the conclusion that we draw from a lot of this is much of this rests on your personal circumstances, how much money you make, where you're living, where you plan on retiring. All of those factors are indeed factors, and it changes from each person.
It really does. And like I said, this tax bill affects people in so many different ways that you can't think of. And it's according to that. It depends on your income level. It depends on whether you're selling a business, you have large capital gains. It depends on the size of your house, the size of your mortgage. So you can't put out a generality. And that's why I think a lot of tax planning is going to be required, especially if you happen to be Larry Lots of Bucks. You may be coming into deferred compensation when you retire, large capital gains, you're selling your business, or you're selling your house here and you're going to move someplace else. So a lot of this really depends on, quite honestly, individual circumstances. So this idea that they were going to simplify the tax code and get it down to a postcard, sorry, folks, that's not going to happen with this bill.
And since we're talking about taxes, we're going to have one of the nation's leading tax experts on this. Robert Wood will be your guest on the program tomorrow, right here on Lifetime Income. And I'm sure many of these topics will come up. As we always do on the program, we do a real life case study, which is always a hypothetical illustration based on real life examples. Names and circumstances where required have been changed to protect privacy. And we always have slides online at financialsense.com, which illustrate all of the points that we're making.
And the program that we're going to talk about today is a retirement checkup. And I really want to talk about getting into financial shape. We'll probably do that in the weeks ahead, about some very important things that you're going to need to do in terms of getting ready for retirement. But I wanted to cover this tax bill because we spent a lot of time on it in the month of November and December, as you know, the jockeying back and forth between the House version, the Senate version, and then all the trial balloons that were thrown out there in terms of what they were going to do. Well, we finally got the details, so I wanted to cover that, which is what we did on this week's show. But let's get into this week's case. It's Mark and Mandy Long. Mark is age 59. Mandy is 58. They both hope to retire in about 3 or 4 years. Given their life expectancy, Mark has a life expectancy of 87, 92 for Mandy. Risk tolerance, pretty moderate. You see this very common when people get ready to retire. Their risk tolerances come down quite a bit. Mark is a credit analyst. He's always made good money. He's never really worried about budgeting or putting together a financial plan. Now, recently, he began seriously considering retirement and had decided to seek financial advice from a professional. Now, he's more of a conservative investor by nature, and as a result, has kept the majority of his investments primarily in cash and bonds. Since the crisis in 2008, he has never really entered the market since then, is not sure how to proceed at this point. He's looking for help to make sure he's able to retire around age 65 and ensure that he and his wife are going to be able to maintain his lifestyle. Because one of the things that happened to a lot of individuals, they went through the bear market that happened in 2000, then once again in 2007. So a lot of people were gun shy about going into the market, and he was mainly stayed in bonds, and to much to his dismay, saw interest rates decline on the bond funds that he was invested in as the Fed brought interest rates and long-term rates came down as well. So he really never got the appreciation. It's hard to believe that this market is up over 300%. So he missed out on a good portion of that. Mandy, on the other hand, is an office manager. She's been involved in managing the finances over the years. She's concerned that they'll be unable to afford their desired lifestyle. She wants the financial ability to be able to take trips with her husband and kids in retirement, but she's not really sure if they can afford to do it. She's mentioned more of their money simply because it's, you know, she's very disciplined, but they're both looking for financial guidance. You know, here's a case where Mandy is probably a little bit more, I would say, more risk prone than, let's say, Mark. And so Mark was the conservative out of the two, with Mandy a little bit more open to risk. Their risk score was 6. Their portfolio risk was 2. So obviously what they wanted and where they were invested were out of line. They were way, way, way too conservative in cash and bond funds, and they had nothing or very little exposure to stocks, and that could come back to hurt them. So this is something that we had to really address in their plan. What were their goals? Number one, they wanted to reduce their taxes. They wanted to increase their savings for retirement, realizing at the rate of return he was getting on his bond funds, that certainly wasn't going to keep them in the lifestyle they're used to living currently with both of them working. Their budget was $72,000 for essentials, $38,000 for discretionary. Mark's salary was $70,000 a year. Mandy's salary was $52,000. So they had a little over a surplus, close to $12,000. They figured in retirement that budget would come down to $60,000. Discretionary would drop from maybe $38,000 to $25,000. So instead of $110,000, that budget would come down to $85,000. Combined Social Security at the time they would retire would be $52,000, leaving them a shortfall of $33,700. Their residence right now was $470,000, of which they had a little over $100,000 mortgage. So they weren't going to be affected by the tax law, or at least on the mortgage side. Mark's retirement was $607,000 in his retirement fund. Mandy's was $265,000. Personally, they had $416,000, which was mainly money markets and CDs at the bank, a total of $1,288,000. So basically, their current asset allocation was 26% in bonds, 4% in stocks, 31% in real estate, and 39% in cash. So if you take a look at 39% in cash and 26% in bonds, they really didn't have growth. The only growth they had, the 31%, was really the value of their house. So not much on the growth side to help them with inflation, especially in their later years, given their life expectancy. So the challenges were a conservative investment allocation, lack of budgeting, no diversification of assets, and really, given what their income needs would be in retirement, insufficient retirement savings. So those were some of the difficulties that we had to address in their plan. What we recommended was a balanced mix between bonds and stocks. And one of the things I tried to point out to Mark, the difference of using individual bonds is if I buy, let's say, a 4% bond, I'm going to get that 4% for the maturity of that bond. It doesn't drop like it does in a bond fund. And we also recommended some very, very conservative blue chip stocks, companies are what we call dividend aristocrats, companies that have been paying dividends 50, 60 years. And, you know, I basically said, look, Mark, you've got to have something that goes up every single year to increase your income, because how are you going to pay for medical expenses further down the road? So with that, that would produce an income of $41,000. So their total income in retirement would be roughly $93,000, leaving them with a surplus of a little over $8,000. We developed a budget and put them on a system so that Mark and Mandy could monitor their spending, because we really wanted to get them to a realistic spending goal. When you reduce your budget by $25,000, I say, well, guys, let's make this practical and let's see how it works. And it's going to begin with budgeting. We also recommended they invested a large amount of their free cash into conservative investment portfolio of stocks and bonds. And we recommended they increase their savings to each one of their 401k plans and that they delay their retirement from age 62 to age 66. Actually, it's about 66 in 4 months when they'd be at full retirement age.
Again, coming up tomorrow as Jim's guest is Robert Wood. He's a recognized expert tax authority, and we'll probably be discussing a lot more of these issues in detail. And anything else on the horizon? Here we are, Jim, starting the new year. We've made it through the tax law. Now we're going to see the impact of the tax law, right, in another year as people file and find out what that impact is going to be. But anything else we're watching as far as retirement?
And regarding retirement, no, I think it's really going to depend here. Once again, for a lot of individuals that live in high cost of living states, high tax states, boy, I tell you, it's going to take a lot of planning because this law, this tax law just passed, is not as simple as it sounds. It is quite complex. And you're really going to need to do some planning. And we're going to help you do that in the weeks ahead as we talk about getting into financial shape as this new year begins. In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertised with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.